Today's episode of All Grown Up Psych is a conversation with writer and director Adam Raymeyer about his movie Snack Shack, releasing in theaters on March 15th, 2024. We only had about 20 minutes to chat, unfortunately, but he gave us some wonderful insight about how he brought so many aspects of his life as a teen in the summer of 91 to screen. I highly recommend checking out the movie and then listening to the episode for some behind-the-scenes anecdotes. As always, thanks for tuning in and never grow up. Our guest today is the award-winning writer and director behind the movie Snack Shack. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Adam Raymeyer. Hey. I got to say, first of all, this movie really touched me in a lot of ways, man. Brought back a lot of happy memories, even though I know you're a 70s baby, 80s kid, 90s teen. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
I'm an 80s baby, 90s kid, 2000s teen. But a lot of crossover, a lot of similar experience. So this movie takes place in the summer of 91. The first thing I want to talk about is you recreating the zeitgeist. When you were writing this movie, did you just draw from memory or did you consult any resources for that? I mean, were you paying very specific attention to the slang, the style, the aesthetic?
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote this, I was writing this about the area that I grew up in, my hometown and everything. So I was, inspired by a very specific place and time. My best friend and I ran the concession stand, at our local swimming pool, and in very similar fashion, we had done the gambling that you see with the dog racing and brewing, we had our little brew operation that
I heard, which here,
right?
By the way, that is fucking impressive for you to have done pre-internet. I mean,
it was pre-internet. I'm glad that you picked up on that.
Like you guys had to find a book or something to do that.
We had to find a tome. We had to find a beer making tome. And we got this thing and we had to read about how to do it, in a book. And we had, to keep it secret too, to hide that. But yeah, we were learning how to, brew. And it was very much, this is 1991. So, microbrews weren't really a thing at the time. It hadn't taken off. So if we hadn't gotten busted by our parents, who knows, maybe we'd be millionaires out in Colorado or something that, had made our money on beer,
Absolutely, man.
But yeah, like drawing a lot of inspiration from my own experiences. I just basically put up note cards for a year or so and just stared at, these sort of bullet points, party getting busted at the Pioneer Theater, jumping our bikes in school, creating fuck dogs. It was all very abstract. And I was just trying to take all of those sense memories that I had and identify what they were, whether it was first kiss or whatever, and put them all places where we hung out, specific spots. And so everything got integrated into the script in a very way that's specific to this little region and this community. And then, obviously with the vernacular, with the boys, creating something unique and special, like a coded way that young boys speak to each other, that it's all these shortcuts and the kind of like a gap fill for each other. It's like their own language at times. And, once you start to decipher it, I think there's even more laughs to be found on a subsequent viewing. Once you get the initial shock and awe of the way that they talk and the rhythm of how they talk to each other. But,
Oh, big facts, man. I mean, that's one of the things that made me so emotional about this is the story of the friendship and the bond and highlighting the realistic bond between two dudes, the way that they're just affectionately calling each other pussy and asshole, but that's just like, I grew up in New York and cutting ass on each other is just how we show love, context to an outside party. It may seem whatever, but like you grew up that way too. And it's part of how we love each other.
That's so true. And, I think it does a disservice to kind of lump it into some kind of toxic, bro status, that's just realistically how young boys are and how young boys talk with each other.
I mean, absolutely.
So that hits home for a lot of people because they remember talking. And even I'm always surprised too, Connor's 20 some years younger than me,
but
his friend circle and growing up, and like they all did the same thing. So
Doing the
it's
same thing, man. It's a
funny.
time-honored tradition.
Right. No, true.
One of the things that I love though is just seeing the high school hustle, man. That brought back a lot of memories for me because I know I heard you identify that one of the things y'all used to do is sell candy, claiming it was for a fundraiser, but really it wasn't.
Classic. That's a
I did
classic.
the same exact shit, man. I ran a candy empire that way.
You only need to sell so many to get a pair of Air Jordans, right? And then,
Exactly,
so you
exactly.
had those like limited goals, like where it was just like an operation, like, okay, we need to find a way to get Air Jordans. You know, parents
Right.
aren't buying them for us, so how are we going to get them? You know,
Right.
gotta have these. So you gotta use a little ingenuity to get them. And so Curbs and candy was one of those things. You know, you could sell some bunk candy or something else, or you could, you know, we painted street curbs. That was, we did them for $5 a pop, put the
Yep.
address on them and, you know, spray them with Utilac and make the border and then spray the numbers on. And I mean, it was just a really, really easy way to get some quick cash. You do, you know, 20 of those, you got $100. So if the shoes are 125, you know, you and your buddy have got to do 50 of these things, you know, together and to get the
Yo,
money. But
big facts. And I think that's one of those beautiful things that is kind of like a time capsule. I feel like I see and hear less of it in childhood generations now that like come up with a little scheme with your bros and just,
not anymore.
not anymore, not anymore. Yeah.
Oh.
So AJ's mostly based on you, but the character of Moose obviously is based on a best friend that you had. Is he still your friend to this day?
Still my friend. He was there at the screening with me last night. His name,
Amazing. What's his name?
his name's Jared. Jared
Jared.
Esper. Yeah.
All right. Shout out to Jared. That's awesome.
There last night with his wife and his daughter. They came to the screening and they hadn't seen anything. I didn't let them see it. So
Oh, nice.
we did a premiere in Nebraska City last night, and I'm here right now. And it was absolutely the most amazing screening of my life being in there, where I had seen
Wow.
growing up, like Raiders of the Lost Ark and, you know, The Thing and Predator and like all of these, you know, childhood classics, Die Hard, you know, like
Yeah, no,
Terminator 2.
what a mind-blowing feeling, man. I mean, so speaking of that, I thought that was one of the things that made this movie feel so authentic. You know, the fact that you shot in Nebraska City, that theater you shot in, the theater that you used to go to, that you, where you had that party, there was the actual snack shack. I'm so curious, since you were able to involve so many people that you grew up with as extras and include them in ways, how early did you identify to the general public that you wanted to be a filmmaker? And then two, were there people that both either believed in you a lot or people that told you that this was not going to happen?
I had no idea when I was like a young boy, like that it would even be possible to be a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Grew up in a really small town where that just seemed very unlikely, and movies were entertainment. They were something that you went to the movie theater and watched. And so I guess my interest in it was just really low and slow. You know, I would sit there, and I always felt like I always just liked the feeling. It was also very hot, you know, in Nebraska too,
Sure.
especially in the summer. So it always felt really good to get inside the cold, dark theater and like watch a movie in the summer and stuff. And I liked the feeling of that. And I liked I mean, like most kids, you fall in love with movies and they're really fun. And so it was just really maybe until I was like 18, I saw Eraserhead when I was like 18,
Yeah.
French film, and that really inspired me because it made me look at movies and be like, oh wow, they can do like something different. Like they don't always have, they can challenge you and challenge your thinking. I was just at a really impressionable age when I saw Eraserhead, maybe like a crossroads, if you will, of like
Sure.
figure out what you wanted to do. And it just, that seemed really inviting that you could. I was suddenly aware that there were, you know, some filmmakers were auteurs and they could control all the elements of a film. And when you do that, something really special can happen in with filmmaking. So I really, really took a lot of inspiration from seeing that when I was 18.
Okay, so you going back home to do this then was just like probably a really cool feeling for everybody that knew you as a kid, man, right? Like they probably were all just like, look at Adam right now, man.
Yeah, there was a lot of that last night. It was really, really, like I said, the best screening of my life. It was the screening that meant the most to me. You know, I've
Yeah.
had amazing screenings abroad. I've had, Sundance 2020 was like for Dinner in America was just a bonkers premiere, but
Yeah.
this one hit so deep. The tears and like laughter were so real and on such a deeper level.
I can see that, man. I can sense that. Did you have a Shane character in your life?
Yeah, like a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a very strong sense memory for me. So, yeah, and I think that, without giving too much away in the film, because I don't want to give away things for
Sure.
people, we deal with that's part of the coming of age experience. You feel very invincible when you're young, and you're not always aware peripherally dangers and things that can happen. So yeah, there's a sense memory person for me for that.
Wow.
But it's not a it's none of while the film is it draws inspiration, it's still a film, but
Sure.
it was more about creating things that like deeply resonate characters that deeply resonated with me and that were truthful, that felt like with my friend group at the time. Like they're close. It's like I've now that I've had a beat to think about it, it's like trying to get the essence of something, like
Yeah.
what was, and like so you really feel that in the film. You feel the essence of these kids, and to me that was a huge success for it in the design and then the finished, version, the finished film. Like really just having having something that's authentic to this specific place
Yes.
and have it resonate a certain way. So that's really what I was focused on, was giving a very well-rounded coming of age experience, and
Yeah.
all aspects of it, from your first loves and these kind of proto relationships that are the building blocks for how you treat people later on in life and the
Yeah.
relationships
Well,
you get into.
let's talk about that for a second. I know that Brooke was an amalgam of a lot of proto relationships that you have, and the movie is sort of an ode to the importance of those things in one's development. Well, first of all, what do you define a proto relationship as?
Like, let's say you went on a vacation with your family and you met, I'll just use a boy. He met a cute girl, and it was the part where he actually they maybe he held hands with the girl for the first time, and it could be a cruise, it could be, a vacation somewhere, maybe shared a first kiss
Yeah.
and always thought about that girl, and it wasn't quite, it's not, there's not any definition to that relationship, but still, that's your first kiss or your first experience, and that might segue into that same kid comes back home and now he has a little bit of confidence, and there's, a girl, it's seventh or eighth grade, and there's a girl that likes him, and now he has a chance, he makes a move and asks her out on a date, and there's another little accomplishment there,
Yeah.
and maybe they date for a while and they break up, and it's there's that's relationship number two, and then he dates another girl, and just like all those like kind of innocent ones in
Yeah.
there that define when you get into a more serious thing. It's all been based on these other ways that you've treated people or ways that you've experienced, love or young love,
Big facts, big
yeah.
facts. Did you and Jared ever have a dispute over a girl the way that AJ and Moose had a dispute over Brooke?
Not in the way that this movie is, but I mean, I'm there was all, I mean, we grew up in a small town,
Yeah.
so you kind of you would I think that everybody was very competitive. And like the one thing that I noticed and the one thing that was funny when you lived in a small town, when somebody's cousin came to stay for the summer or
Yeah.
somebody like everybody was just like, who is this? Who's this new person that we've never seen before? Like,
Yeah.
where did she come from? So there was always that excitement. 'Cause you go to school with the same 100 kids,
Yes, yeah.
and it's very repetitive, and then so I like the idea that he had a neighbor that was his age, but she had a cousin that was slightly older, could drive a car, like
Yep.
all of those fun things, so that was kind of the idea of just I think there were like a lot of like obeying a lot of tropes and cliches almost, if you will, with
Yeah.
but in reality You could label something cliche or a trope, but aren't those all true tropes that have to like tried and true with like every single teenager? Like you can't avoid it because that's literally all the like things that happen to you when you're a
Yes.
teen. So
Well, thank you for saying that, man.
it was leaning into those tropes because those are the actual tropes that there are. Like you can call something cliche, but it's like, I mean, what you do with it that counts, you know? Like
Yes.
I like that. I feel like Connor and Mika and Gabe and Nick are so natural
Yeah.
and so pulled down that it suddenly is not a cliche because it's human and they're telling a human story, you know, through themselves as the vessels for this. But it doesn't feel it. Yes, it obeys tropes and cliches in teen stories, but every teen story is a trope and a cliche.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that's why I think you sort of maybe hammered home a feeling, at least for me, that hasn't been done that way in quite some time. I think maybe people were sort of purposely trying to stay away from that or something, but it made me feel the same way I felt, watching some of my favorite movies growing up as a kid, just, buddy movies or just a teen high school comedy because yeah, you love those tropes because you relate to them. You had those tropes in your life, right?
That's why I, you know, Hollywood bums me out sometimes because it's like, you know, they act like the audience isn't very sophisticated or young
Right.
people aren't sophisticated. They're absolutely sophisticated and they're the most sophisticated dollars because most of the time they're the ones that are spending the actual money on it. You know, it's date night or whatever, and they're the
Yes,
ones that are
sir.
going. So why disappoint them with cliches like, you know, nothing's worse than taking a trope or cliche and then doing something super cliche with it, you
Right.
know? Like if these things they call it a trope or cliche because it's universal. So
Yeah.
you could tell universal stories that can connect with people that just I don't feel like the kids we're not dumbing anything down here and the kids are so natural that it feels very lived in and cozy. Like it's a com it, I, most people that have come up and said, this is like my new comfort film. I'm like, that's nice to hear. You know, that's
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah. Big facts, man. Did you ever make out to Combat Shock?
I haven't yet.
Put
I haven't yet.
it on the docket.
Yeah, I know, right?
A publication called News Channel Nebraska put together newspaper clippings about actual stuff you did in the 90s. Have you seen that?
Haven't seen it yet.
I will send you a link. It's amazing. So let's talk about your band, Hot Brown Water.
Yeah, that was Nolan Shigley, Nick Barton, and Scott on drums. So yeah, Nolan was our singer. He was the one that actually came up with the Hot Brown Water thing. It was from his dad and him. I think they were either running or they were biking, and one of them had diarrhea. And I
Holy
think it was his dad. And
shit.
it was like it was nothing but hot brown water, and we were just all right. We're doing that. Yeah, that was like an early kind of a metal band type of thing that we did. Yeah, in the early. That's a super deep cut, bro. You went super deep there. I was not expecting to talk about Hot Brown Water.
I try. Well, do you still have any recordings of perhaps Mecca High or Tatanka Buffalo Run?
Wow, that's just wow. You're hitting the deep cuts there. I do have the recordings of these. Yes, I do. Yeah, Mecca
Amazing.
High was great. That's crazy. That's a crazy one.
Perhaps
Wow.
we'll have to see them in the next film.
Yeah, I know. I should have had something on the background in there playing in this, but I'm separated from those recordings right now. They're in a storage space, so I don't have them at the moment. But I
Okay.
could. That would have been fun. Something with those.
What content were you consuming in the 90s that you believe inspired you as a filmmaker today?
In the 90s, I was watching a lot of just, you know, I was watching like horror films, you know, from the 70s and 80s. So
Yeah.
that was my bread and butter. I like the kind of grindhouse type of stuff, you know, and horror films, the combat shocks of it all, if you
Yeah.
will. But
Yeah.
yeah, like a nice split of mainstream Hollywood stuff that I could see in the theater, in our small theater. You know, all the big ones, everything. All the big ones that you can imagine, you know, that right down the line. But then on the other hand, it was the heyday of VHS. So
Yes,
you
sir.
get a lot of obscure kind of horror stuff at the same time. So
Yeah.
nice mix of both.
If you could bring back just one thing from the 90s, what would it be?
Kurt Cobain.
Oh shit, that was quick. Love that answer.
I love Kurt.
Yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Awesome, man. Well, Adam, thank you so much for your time, man. I wish we had more of it. There's so much I'd love to talk to a guy like you about. But I just want to say thank you for making this film, man. It made me laugh. It made me cry. It made me cry a lot. And it unlocked a lot of happy memories for me, man. And I think that when this hits theaters, people are going to really feel the same about it.
You got to see it in the theater. You've got to see it in the theater with the crowd. You
Oh,
have
of course. Of course,
to. It
man.
makes a huge difference with it. I mean, it's so fun with a crowd.
You bet. I'm going to see it in theater with wifey, and then I will bring her back and we will make out to Combat Shock.
That is amazing.
And ladies and gentlemen, until next time, I'm all grown up.
Psych.
There we go.